Hi, this is Griselda Tugubo of Awobi Consulting. In this session, I have the honor of interviewing the very lovely Stephanie Hale. Stephanie is a former assistant director of Oxford University's world-famous creative writing program, and she now helps people to get their books published. I first came across Stephanie when I went to one of her women's boot camp, and I was so impressed by the numbers at the boot camp. And since then, I've been to an author's boot camp as well. And I was just so impressed. And I thought I have to interview her to just find out exactly how she manages to pull over 300 people each day for 3 days. So welcome, Stephanie. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Okay. So can you? I know your story is very inspiring about how you got started in business. Can you just share that with us?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I mean, I suppose how I first got started was after my marriage broke up. And that was kind of a wake-up call for me. I think before that time, although I hadn't realized it, I'd been kind of sleepwalking a little bit through life, especially financially, and left a lot of the kind of financial decisions to my husband. I'd been doing a lot of things that were kind of expected of me or what I thought I ought to do through school or university.
Yeah.
And suddenly I found myself a single parent, not able to make money to support myself and my son, who was about 4 at the time, I think, 3 or 4. And so we ended up going from living a lovely 5-star lifestyle, when I was married, to pretty much overnight living in a red light district. The house we were living in, or I say the house, it was a flat, had water pouring in through the ceiling.
Oh,
it had toadstools growing off the back of the toilet. It had mold on most of the furniture. We had hookers outside. I mean, it just wasn't a good place to live. And I suppose the thing that really brought it home to me was when, because a whole series of things had happened. You know, my washing was getting stolen. I had people trying to break into the flat. Had a local wino sleeping outside the front door. My handbag was stolen by one of my neighbors while I was unloading my shopping. It was just nonstop. But the thing that kind of brought it home to me was when a four-year-old got raped in what was then at that time our, we didn't have a garden, but we had a playing field where take my son kite flying. Of course, my son was the same age at the time, and I just thought, oh my God, I can't live here. I can't bring my son up here and be here forever, because when I looked into the future, all I saw was more of the same. If I carried on doing the same thing over and over again, all I could see was that I was going to be there for the next 10, 20, 30 years, forever. And I just didn't want to bring my son up in that environment.
Yeah,
I was scared for him. I was scared for him and scared for us, really. So that was the starting point for me, because then I went to the library and just got out loads and loads of books, anything to do with money or wealth creation. Didn't even know what I was looking for, but that's how it started. That's how I got started.
Right. So once you started reading, what was the next thing you did? Because now you have several businesses, but what was the specific step you took from reading the books and then from to applying them?
The first step I took actually was to leave my job, because I was working, as you say, as assistant director at Oxford University. When I left, everyone was incredibly shocked, because I was one of the very first people that had ever left their job there. Pretty much, if you got a job there, people stayed in their job forever. But it was a grand title, but not very much
pay. I was thinking that as well.
It was a very grand title, but believe me, it was very, very, very low pay. For the hours that were expected. So when I left, I set up my own business initially to help authors write their books, to give them editing services and proofreading services, and to help them find literary agents. And in addition to that, I learned how to trade commodities and became a commodities and equities trader and became a trading coach. So I did things side by side. So I did the two things because I just knew that if I stayed where I was, I was always going to be, going around on my bicycle everywhere rather than a nice car or living in a nice house. And I wanted more than that for my son. And also I wanted to be able to work from home. I didn't want to have to go into work and have to pull sickies if he was ill. I didn't want him to be in childcare. I wanted to be there for him.
Wow. I didn't even know about the investment commodities trading. Do you still do that now?
I do that for myself now. I do that for myself, but I don't take on clients. I think I've got so many, I do so many different things to carry on teaching trading. I think you've got to be, I love trading. It's one of the most exciting things that you can do. But I think that has to be your sole passion. I think if that's what you're going to do and you're going to teach other people, you need to be watching the markets every day, yeah, all day. And that's certainly what I did. For the first 3 or 4 years is every day, all day long, I looked at charts. And you know what? I loved it. But in my heart of hearts, the thing that I really, really is my real big passion is books and getting yeah. people published. And so I had to make a decision, which was a tough decision, of which way I was going to go. And it was with women entrepreneurs and with entrepreneurs and with books rather than trading, simply because there's only one of me and not enough hours
yeah.
in there.
Wow, it seems like you're very good at taking decisions. You just make up your mind and then you move on from it.
It takes me sometimes a while to make my decisions. I can't say I make my decisions easily, but what I tend to do is I have a decision and I will not even consciously think about it. Sometimes I'll make a list of the positives and the negatives and write it on a piece of paper. And then what I'll do is I'll go away and not think about it for a week or a fortnight. And then one day I usually just wake up and the answer's there. Sometimes I don't have a definite answer. But usually once I've made the decision, I just go with it and make the best of that decision. And yeah, just always try and look for the positive in it. Yeah. And but I can't say, you know, there's any kind of I'm probably stronger at making decisions than other people. Some decisions are easy to make, but some are really tough. You know, some are incredibly tough decisions, and I can take months to make a decision. So no, I wouldn't say I'm an instant decision maker at all. But what I mean, whatever, you know, let's face it, there's no right or wrong always.
Yes, yes.
It's just what you make of it. It's what you make of the hand that you're dealt, really.
Yeah. So how did you get into events?
How did I get into events? Well, basically, I first held an event to tie in with my book, Millionaire Women, Millionaire You.
Yeah.
And that book, I was holding a seminar, so I invited 10 millionaire women to talk about different topics like property or trading or media, social media or internet marketing, lots of different things or different aspects of business. And I intended that to be for about 200 people, but actually it ended up being a runaway success, and we had 3,000 people register and 1,000 people show up, so we had to upgrade the venue at the last minute.
Wow, that's impressive.
And pretty much, I have to say, every event that I've held since has been like that, really.
Yeah.
Most events, you know, the next event I held, we had to move the stage back to make way for all the chairs. There were so many people showed up, we had to move the stage to make, you know, 2 extra rows of chairs to accommodate those. The most recent event, I had to have a second room with a live feed to accommodate everyone. Oh, sorry, that's my phone.
No problem.
So I'll just switch that off, sorry.
No problem.
Okay. So pretty much that's been my experience of having events, is that it's just kind of taken off. And I'd say the book really was the front end of that, because I found that with my book, it attracted people to my social media. So I had over 100,000 people then on my social media platforms, and, you know, friending me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on YouTube, over 40,000 subscribers to my newsletters. So it was just like kind of wildfire, really. And the
wow,
book.
Wow, that's very impressive for an author.
It just helped me to reach a lot of people very quickly. And then beyond that, with lots of kind of affiliates and JV partners. So, so it's been very, very fortunate. It's been really exciting, because it's meant I've been able to help a lot of people. So a lot of other people that were perhaps in the same circumstances that I was when I was floundering around wondering what the answers were and how I was going to get out of that mess, it means that I can help other people who are in exactly the same position.
Wow, I don't even know what to say. So before you had the first event, were you already using social media to promote yourself, or did that all come off the back of that first event?
The first event, No, I'd say prior to that, although I was trading and I was quite adept at trading, good at that, I was actually quite phobic about the internet and phobic about technical things. I mean, even now, I have problems with the remote control on the television. I don't have to say I don't watch television very much. I probably watch it twice a year or something.
Wow.
But even the answer machine or my basic things that other people find pretty easy, I struggle with. So it wasn't something that came naturally to me anyway. But I think with most things, what I tend to do is I break it down into smaller chunks. So I'll sort of look at the mountain and I'll think, well, that mountain looks too daunting for me. I think I'll just look at the first 10 yards. And I'll move forward that 10 yards, then I'll move forward the next 10 yards and the next 10 yards. So I break it down and learn one thing at a time. So first of all, I started with Facebook, then I moved on to Twitter, and then I moved on to LinkedIn. And with each of those, I learned how to master them. And at the moment, I'm kind of working on YouTube, and getting that right. So with every stage, I'm working on something, an individual target, and getting that right before I move on to the next.
So how have you promote for somebody listening to this and wondering, okay, I have a book or I have a business. How do I also invite 3,000 people to come and listen to what I have to say? What advice do you have for them? How should they go about it?
Well, I mean, all of those things, social media and the internet is one of the most powerful ways of reaching people and large numbers of people. And so once you've started build, I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. You have to kind of build up your list and build up your friend list, for example, on Facebook, or build up your friend list on LinkedIn. And you can't do that in a week. That takes time, because otherwise you get blocked, your account gets blocked and shut down, which has happened to me a couple of times. So I know from experience, what can happen. So that's a very powerful way of reaching people, is via social media. The next step, which is probably more advanced, which I found quite daunting at the start, is having joint ventures with other business owners or bloggers or experts in the same field as you, where you get them to allow you to be a guest expert speaker or a guest blogger on their site. And then they will promote your event for you. So there's something in it for them. And another step, which again, which sounds probably, to me, it sounded quite daunting until I did it, is to set up an affiliate system where you basically give affiliates a percentage or a commission for promoting your event. So there's something in it for them. There's actually a reason for them to do it. It's not just goodwill, but there's a reason why they would want to promote your event. And they get a financial incentive for doing that. So that's another way of doing it. I mean, I have to say, for many years, people said to me, you must have an affiliate system. And I put it off because I thought it was something I'd never done. It sounded daunting. It sounded quite scary to me. And it was only when I was holding an event a couple of years ago, and somebody I was working with that time wasn't doing any promotion, and there were a lot of things that I had hoped would happen that hadn't happened. And because of that, I felt my back was against the wall. I felt I wasn't going to fill the event in time, and that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And because of that, I sorted out an affiliate system, just basically because I was at my wit's end at that time. I was, what do I do? What can I do? And it was fantastic. I couldn't believe how brilliantly it worked. And it was just pure magic, really. I have to say, I wouldn't. I have to. I tend to be somebody who, I do take risks. I take a lot of risks, probably more so than most people. And I'm quite comfortable being outside my comfort zone and uncomfortable. But sometimes, when things to take that extra leap, when things seem super uncomfortable and you're going the extra mile, I do have to have a bit of a push or a shove. And I've always had a mentor myself. I've got a mentor right now. So I check in with him every week, once a week for an hour, and that kind of keeps me on my toes as well. So it just means you're always adapting, you're always fresh. I don't think you ever completely, especially with the internet, you never completely have
I
learned.
know, it changes so quickly.
And business changes so quickly. The economy at the moment is very different. People's needs are very different. People are responding differently to different marketing messages because they get tired with one marketing message and they want to hear something fresh. So you always have to be on your toes and you have to be nimble. But that's one of the advantages small entrepreneurs have over big corporations, because a big corporation, you go to them and they take several weeks to make a decision. They have to go through subcommittees and committees and different directors and different levels of hierarchy and authority. And so they're a lot slower to respond to change. You know, something as simple as changing the color of their brochure or changing the design of their website.
I know, so many loops to go through.
Exactly. I might have 16 people all deciding that, you know, so... As I say, it's much better for a small entrepreneur to do that.
Okay. So when did you reach your tipping point? At what point did you feel that, right, this is going really well and I'm happy doing this now, I'm comfortable with the money I'm making?
I wouldn't say that there was ever a tipping point for me. I think it's a slow progression. I wouldn't say there was ever one day where I woke up and thought, oh, this is it. You know, this is it. I've got the tipping point now. I think...
Well, some people have said it's when they've looked at their contact list, their email list, and it's been over 3,000 people. And, with 3,000 people, he started selling a bit more of his consulting services.
Okay, I see. So you want something specific.
Yeah.
I suppose when I held my first event and we brought in nearly £200,000 worth of sales over 2 days, that was a pretty good moment.
£200,000.
The last event brought over £360,000 worth of sales over 3 days. So, £460,000 worth of sales over 3 days. So that's nearly £500,000 worth of sales.
Yes.
So that's a pretty good feeling. If you're looking for moments where you think, wow, that was pretty good. I did okay then.
And even with that, you do feel you had reached your tipping point.
I'm not sure that you ever feel it. I think you get complacent and a bit blasé if you ever reach that tipping point. I think there's always a new level to push towards. So I wouldn't say, I wouldn't say I kind of measure it in terms of money or numbers necessarily.
Yeah.
It tends to be more just, I think what's nice is just the small things for me of waking up every day, of being able to take my children to school, of knowing that I'm there for them if they have a sports day, and I'm there in the playground, being able to watch the sports or being able to watch their play at school and thinking, it's not a stress, I can do this and I can be there for them. Whereas a lot of other mothers who are working can't.
It's so really hard,
Or when you get a client who's done really well, somebody's come to you who's desperate, and they're at the wit's end, they can't get anyone to take their book or they're broke, and then they suddenly make breakthroughs, you know, and they have a best-selling book and they're making lots of money themselves, six figures or seven figures. And that's exciting too.
Right. Very, very nice figures you've mentioned there. So you do your events just once a year?
I do my big events once a year because they take about 3 months, 2 to 3 months to organize and do it properly, I have lots of smaller events, smaller seminars. I've just got one coming this weekend. I had one a few weeks ago, which is a bestseller in 30 days intensive. So for 30 days, basically, I take different entrepreneurs or consultants or coaches, help them to write a book for 30 days and then turn it into a bestseller. And we do that. That's a 30-day program, and there's a one-day workshop leading into that. And I have various different seminars. So, you know, for example, how you use social media to promote your books, or how you turn your book into a bestseller, or how you can make a lot of money from self-publishing. So I hold seminars on those individual events, but those are smaller events for, you know, 20 people or for 100 people or for 10 people, depending on the level, rather than the big events.
Right. So what are some of the mistakes you've made? I know you've mentioned a few, but what's the biggest mistake you've learned from?
I'm not sure that I would call them mistakes, because everything that you do...
Oh, I love your attitude.
You learn from everything. Learn from everything that you do. I mean, there's been times where I've trusted people who've betrayed my trust, and I suppose that those have been the things that have cut the deepest, I think, for me personally, is where I've trusted somebody in a business situation. I'm somebody who believes that if you say you're going to do something, you know, even if I don't sign a contract, as far as I'm concerned, my word is my bond.
Your word is bond, yeah.
And I've said it, therefore I'll do it. So I always keep my word. And there have been people who've signed contracts who haven't kept their word, And those have been the toughest. I'd say those have been the toughest moments, is where people have committed to things either on paper or verbally, and they haven't fulfilled their promises. So those have been the toughest things to cope with. And I'm not sure really how you learn from those, except when you think about it, there's probably small signs there at the beginning that perhaps you overlook. But then, having said that, you have to give people the benefit of the doubt. You can't jump on every small thing that somebody does and say, oh, well, that must mean that you're untrustworthy then. So I'd say those are probably the toughest things I've had to encounter. And those have been the hardest things. But largely speaking, I think that, you know, 99% of people, and the people that I mix with, the people I work with, are fantastic. And I think if any learning comes out of that, it's that you don't let that 1%, because it's very easy to let that 1% overshadow your judgment. Because I hear people saying to me all the time, oh, you can't trust anyone in business, oh, they're all sharks, you can't trust any. And I think, well, you know, I don't believe that. That's not what I believe. I believe that the majority of people are good people who are high integrity, doing the best they can. And that's certainly not my experience. And that the small number of times where people have been untrustworthy, it is just a tiny percentage. And I think the lesson in it is to keep your vision, to keep your own integrity, and that will draw other people of integrity to you. And to keep believing that, and not to get cynical, not to get negative, and not to get let other people's negativity, not to get drawn into it, and to just keep your own, you know, keep motivating yourself, keep giving yourself new goals, new targets, new challenges, and keep working at that.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the reasons why I wanted to interview you as well, because you just come across through your emails and even in person as such a genuine person. Because now when you look around, you're not sure, as you've said, well, you don't want experiences to dictate how you relate to people, but at the same time, you're very cautious. But with you, I didn't feel any of that. You were just such a lovely woman.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So for any woman, man listening to this, thinking, what three things can I take away from this call to do to grow my coaching business, consulting business, training business, small business? What three things can they take from you that could make a difference and see their business grow?
Okay, number one, and I see this all the time, they must have a way of contacting people. So you always hear the phrase, the money's in the list, and it absolutely is in the list. And by a list, it could mean your newsletter. So you've got a newsletter or what's called an autoresponder system, which is a way of contacting lots of people, large numbers of people, via email in one hit. So effectively, you're sending out an email to, you know, 30,000 people, or you might only be 100 people, but you need to be able to contact them. Because, for example, what I see with authors is they sell their books, and then on the back of the books, they don't have their website, or they don't have an incentive for people to go to their website and then sign up to a newsletter. So people are buying their books, and then they've lost them. They've got no way of contacting them at all. But for example, suppose they have another book, or suppose they have an event, or suppose they're lecturing, or suppose they have a seminar. They've got no way of contacting them. So number one, and a lot of entrepreneurs, surprisingly, you know, it amazes me how many entrepreneurs do not have an opt-in box on their webpage. And if they do have an opt-in box, there's no
it's hidden.
There's no incentive for doing it. It's just like, well, why would I give you my name and email address? I'm already bombarded with loads of stuff. There's got to be a pretty good reason why you would want to sign up. So I'd say that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, I'd say get a mentor, simply because initially I was very reluctant to get mentors. When I had no money 10, 15 years ago, I tended to just buy lots of books and learn from those. But of course, there's nothing worse than charging enthusiastically in the wrong direction. So you kind of you learn what you need to learn, but sometimes there's emphasis on something where you sort of charge off and you think you've got it, but actually you haven't. Whereas somebody else will put you straight in 10 seconds. But it's scary, you know. I mean, even now, with my mentor, I think it was something like £15,000 for 6 months of mentoring once a week, you know, and I sat down and worked out, thought, good God, you know, how much is he charging me per time I speak to him? You know, it's just like, kind of, you know, do I really want to spend this money? Yeah. But then you think, well, it's going to come back to you tenfold, and it does come back to you tenfold. But every time you think about spending the money, you sort of gulp a bit, and then you just got to go for it. Because I'm not saying you should be spending that sort of level at the beginning. It might just be going to a seminar for £100 or £200. So start small until you get results, and make sure you do get results. But mentors will get you there so much faster every single time. So I'd say absolutely get yourself a mentor. As I say, I still have one, and I will always have one. Yeah. I'll always have somebody to get me to the next level and the next and the next. Because, you know, even when you're earning £1 million, You then need to know how to make £10 million.
How to spend £1 million properly.
Or how to make £100 million. You know, it's just, there's always a new level to go to. So get a mentor and keep learning, keep open to change. And the last one is mindset. I mean, for example, this morning I have an author who has done very, very well. You know, he's got his book in place. He's got a leading authority. I could give you the names, but I can't. It's a really big, a really huge name to be interviewed for this book. But he's in despair and saying it's not coming together fast enough. It's not happening quickly enough. And I just said, you know, I don't think this is a. And he's pulling apart the book and worrying about why it's not working and this and that. And I said, you know, this isn't a strategic issue. This isn't something to do with your strategy or your plot or your structure or anything to do with the book. This is to do with your mind. This is to do with your mindset, because actually, what you have in front of you is really good, but you just can't see it because you're blinding yourself with your own panic. And people can get in a tiz, and sometimes people get like that with their businesses too, where they can't see the good. And I sometimes get like this, you know, you get like this, and I have my mentors pull me out. So always check your mindset and make sure that, you know, what you're thinking isn't necessarily whether it's true or not, you know, because sometimes you can get into a negative spiral and get into a little bit of a brain, you know, a storm, this panic storm where you think things aren't working. But actually, sometimes it's a minor tweak, a minor adjustment, and then you get amazing results. So it's hugely about mindset. And I know at the start of my journey, you know, when people used to say it's 90% mindset and 10% strategy, I just think, you know, what are you on about? Show me the money. Show me the money. I don't care about mindset. Just show me the money. I just want to know what to do. Tell me. And then I realized that actually they're absolutely right. It was about mindset, because there's always going to be hurdles. There's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be things that don't go quite to plan as you thought they would do. So just always be ready to, even when things go wrong, which they do, be ready to have a plan B or a plan C, and just always get the best out of it. So so those are my three things, really. So and as I say, with mindset, it sounds woolly, but it's vital.
Yeah, that's why I want to dig into that just a little bit more. How will somebody actually do that? Because you hear this a lot online, you have to be positive. And sometimes when you tell people, they just look at you, as you've said, thinking, please show me the money. So what specific, because I'm a very enthusiastic, very positive person, and I try to see the good in everything, but some people just don't have that perspective, and it's just developing the right habit. So what tip can you share with someone thinking, you know, how do I improve my mindset? What things have you been doing to improve your mindset?
Okay. I mean, to give you a perspective, I was very, very negative in my teens, very negative. I had a very traumatic childhood, a very unhappy childhood. And so probably, you know, from my teens into my early 20s, I was incredibly negative. I was very miserable. I was very unhappy. And I probably spread a lot of that negativity to people around me. That was not a good place to be. You start with small steps by thinking, no matter what the situation, what's the blessing in this? So, you know, don't expect to get it right the very first time, because, you know, it takes time to retrain your mind, to reprogram your mind. But once you start realizing that by doing that, you're feeling better about yourself, you're seeing good in your situation, you're drawing then more positive situations to you, you're thinking better about people, you draw better sort of people to you, because otherwise if you're negative, you draw negative people. that reinforce what you believe. And one of the things that I do, particularly when I hit big challenges, so say, for example, a relationship breakup or something going very wrong with my business, nowadays what I do is what I think of as the Tony Robbins challenge, which is that for 10 consecutive days, you do nothing but think positive thoughts, okay? And this is the challenge. So for 10 consecutive days, you can only think negative thoughts. If you think a negative, sorry,
you can only think positive.
And if you think negative thought, you can do it.
Yes, you sign out thinking negative.
You can think a negative thought for up to 3 minutes, but that's the most you're allowed to give it, okay? If you go beyond that, you have to start your 10 days all over again.
Wow.
So you have to go back to the beginning. So there's a big incentive for getting to the end. You give yourself a reward at the end. So you might think, at the end of this, I'm going to have, you know, a big box of chocolates. I'm going to go away for the weekend. I'm going to see my friend. I'm going to have a party. I'm going to do whatever. As I say, for the negative, you have to go back to the beginning and start all over. You know, the very first time I did this challenge, it was after a relationship breakup, and I found it quite tough. And I probably started this challenge and restarted it. I must have restarted
it. That's a massive hurdle.
I must have restarted it about 20 times. It probably took me about 3 months to complete it, to finally do it. But for that 3 months, I was retraining my brain,
right.
And it was very valuable. And now, you know, I know that whenever, and if I really hit something that really gets to me, you know, in some things, you know, most things now, I'm always looking for the blessing. I always go straight to the blessing. What's the blessing
wow.
in this? What can I learn from this? What's the positive in this? So I go straight to that. But occasionally there are things that really cut deep, and it's harder. It's harder to find the blessing. And although intellectually you see the blessing, emotionally it still hurts. And emotionally, it's hard to sleep. It's hard to think about anything else during the day. You're distracted. You feel sick. You can't eat. You know, it really bothers you. And those are the times when I use the 10-day challenge. So I'd say that's something that anyone can use
yeah.
at any time.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing this interview, to give people specific things they can take away to do. Oh, thank you. That's a great one.
Absolutely.
Okay. We should be rounding off now, but I have one last question. It's just about your contact. You know, when you have your event, you have such fabulous speakers. How do you connect with these people? Because they're from all over the world.
Well, I mean, in the internet age, it's really easy to contact with people. Most people have their own website. Most people have a Facebook account. Most people have a Twitter account. So pretty much, you know, in the old days, any author or big public speaker would have had a literary agent or an agent that represented them. So you'd have to go through gatekeepers to get to them. But nowadays, it's really easy to get to people. So as I say, if you go on Facebook, most people have their phone number or their website on there or their email address. Really, really easy. It's never been easier to contact people. And so, I mean, a lot of people contact me through Facebook or through LinkedIn. Or through my website, you know, come across me through those ways. So that's how I contact people.
Okay, thank you. Last question on time management. Being a mom and having several businesses, how have you managed it all? What tools do you use that somebody else listening can also use?
The thing that I always do, and I'm very hot on, is leverage. So I'm always thinking, how can I do this faster with less effort? Because there's only one of me. I've got three children. I'm still a single parent. And so I'm always thinking, how can I do this one task faster? Because with one of me, you know, if I was trying to do something all by myself, it's like having a teaspoon on a beach, you know, shoveling sand. You know, one of me is never going to do it. There's always going to be loads more sand. You know, I'm never going to do it on my own. So I'm always thinking, you can either automate it, for example, through an autoresponder system or a newsletter. So how can I reach all my clients faster? So usually it's through a newsletter or through an email. How can I get my housework done quicker? So it's usually through, you know, can I get a cleaner? If I'm earning X amount per hour or per day, does it make sense for me when somebody else could do it for £10 an hour? It doesn't. Does it make sense for me to do my own shopping? No, it doesn't. Can
wow,
I pay
someone
at Tesco? You know, Tesco, it's £4. They do all your shopping and everything and your delivery for £4. Why would I want to do my own shopping? So I'd say think it always about leverage in terms of, does it make sense for you to do a particular task and give an hour of your time? I mean, you might enjoy some things. You know, there's times I enjoy mowing my own lawn. There's times I enjoy hanging out my own washing. But it doesn't make sense for me to do it all the time because I can use my time better elsewhere. And I want to spend quality time with my family. So leverage is always something I'm continually thinking about, you know, and I outsource a lot of things because I know somebody else will do it faster than I can. I've got about 50 different people that I outsource to all over the world. So that would be what I'd say in terms of time management. Always think how you can leverage your time and outsource things.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Stephanie. So anybody listening to this call who wants to find out more about what you do, where can they connect and link up?
Okay, well, if they're interested in writing and writing a book as a front end to their business, the best place to go is oxfordwriters.com. That's www.oxfordwriters.com. There's also free reports on that website about how to get a literary agent, how to write a marketing plan for your book, the biggest mistakes you can make as a writer, the big mistakes you can write with writing a book. If you're interested in coming to one of my women's events or interested in my book, you can go to millionairewomenmillionaireyou.com and you get a free chapter from that book, and you'll also get my free report, 5 Millionaire Tips for Women and their steps you can take today. So as I say, those are the two places, or you can reach any of my websites because I've got a number of them at just stephaniejhale.com.
Okay, so thank you. And again, this is Griselda Togobo of Awovi Consulting, and you can find me at www.awovi.com. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks very much.